Hello, everyone. Welcome to Super Metal World. It's Michael.
And it's Ty.
This week, we have an interview with Adam from Rivers of Nile.
Yes, they are the death metal band. They're out of Pennsylvania, and they're gathering a lot of steam because their newest release, Where Owls Know My Name, is pretty fantastic.
Absolutely fantastic. Yep. Going gangbusters.
Mm-hmm. They're going bananas on that album. And it's actually a pretty drastic change from their sophomore effort, which was Monarchy, which was to us was more of a straightforward tech death metal type release. Still some really proficient work in there, yep, and still enjoyable moments. But this one, there's just so much experimentation, but still maintaining those core death metal elements.
Yes.
And it's just a very memorable listen. And you enjoy saxophone. Especially if you enjoy saxophone and metal.
Ooh, those two together is a perfect harmony.
Actually really works.
And you include a little electronica, just like a very tasteful amount of some of that. It's
Not Skrillex level.
No,
electronica.
Just what you'd expect, just the right amount.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, remember to check us out on all of the social medias. That would be Facebook and Twitter and Instagram.
We're available on iTunes and Stitcher. Please rate and review. 5 stars only.
That's only
all we're accepting. And only good things to say about us. No bad. If you got something bad to say, don't say it.
You can email us at supermetalworld@gmail.com.
Only
and
to tell us how great we've been.
Our website is
www.supermetalworld.com. We've never done that before.
Wow.
That's some chemistry.
Let it run.
We're here with Adam from Rivers of Nile.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
Doing all right, man. Just out here on the road, living that life that way for now.
Absolutely. And you guys have been at this for a while now. Now, Rivers of Nile has been a band for, has it been over 10 years?
No, not quite there. We got about a year and a half-ish to go until we get to that particular anniversary.
But pretty close, anyway.
Yeah.
And Adam, you're the bassist. You do a little bit of the backing vocal as well. Am I right on that?
Yeah.
And then I've noticed you contribute a lot to the songwriting process as well.
Yeah. Mostly in the lyrics department. That's mostly my thing.
Okay, sure. We'll touch upon the lyrics in a little bit.
Sure.
But mostly, kind of just wanted you to introduce to our listeners and maybe people who don't know, who is Rivers of Nile? Where do you guys come from? You know, what are you all about?
Well, we're just we're a five-piece death metal, progressive death metal outfit from Reading, Pennsylvania. We formed in 2009 out of the sort of remains of two other local bands that had fallen apart, like, initially. We've gone through some member changes, and now we have some members from all over the place. But we got signed to Metal Blade in 2012, and we've put out now 3 records through that label. And here we are today.
Awesome. So, yeah, like you mentioned, bassist, you do some of the writing, some of the backing vocals. Can you talk about the other members in the band briefly and what their role is?
Sort of my biggest partner, I guess, like the main songwriter of the band would be Brody Utley. He's also our lead guitarist. He does, like, a, you know, he's got some production skills, so he, you know, he writes a good bulk of the material, like, on his own. Our other guitarist, rhythm guitarist, is John Tapor. He also, you know, he's written a few songs for us in his time in the band. We have Jared Klein, who is our newest drummer in our drumming legacy for this band. He plays on our new record. He does an amazing job, fitting like a glove. And last but not least is our frontman, lead vocalist, Mr. Jake Diefenbach. And screamer extraordinaire he is.
Awesome. Yes, he does an excellent job. And Where Owls Know My Name, that was released, you know, early 2018. Was it March when that was released?
Yeah, I think it's only been out for about 3 weeks.
Yeah, right. And I actually remember we played a little snippet of The Silent Life on an earlier episode of our podcast, and I'd actually truthfully never heard of you guys before. I was like, man, this is something really different. But then cool. As we did more research in preparation for talking with you, we realized that this album in itself is kind of a different step for you guys. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, we did, you know, like I said, we had done two records prior to this one. And like, you know, there was a big evolution from the first one to the second one.
Sure.
But we wanted to, you know, we thought we had kind of just nailed down like a good sound that we want, that we liked a lot on our second record, Monarchy. But we also didn't want to like, we wanted to take like, you know, the Rivers of Nile formula and really push it and see how far we could take it, like with a more experimental attitude.
Absolutely.
Open to, you know, different forms of songwriting, open to different instrumentation, some, like a lot of different vocal performance stuff. Just kind of let loose on this one, really.
So it seems like you kind of created this identity of like, you know, this is what the Rivers of Nile sound is, and now, you know, let's even expand upon it further and, like you said, add these different elements.
Yeah. So, I mean, we had something that we felt like it worked. And if we really wanted to, we could probably just release something that sounds essentially identical to it. There are a lot of bands out there that just pretty much do that. That's what they do. They, you know, which there's nothing really wrong with it. You know, having that niche is, and like having a product for your listeners that's like dependable on that level, like that's something special too. But we also felt like we wanted to, you know, we wanted to push past that and give people something they didn't expect.
Right. Seems like you wanted to almost challenge yourselves as musicians in the process as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, maybe just challenge ourselves differently than we had before, you know, not instead of just like, let's see how much technical proficiency we can do. Let's see how nimble the songwriting can be and how tasteful we can make things sometimes.
Do you think it was an extra challenge to add some of these elements, or was it still kind of your usual process of creating a record?
I mean, very much like the process was very much the same as it was for the previous two records. Like it was just a lot of, you know, Brody, you know, starting a song and then the rest of us giving input. And then, you know, with other little twists and turns here and there, but, and this record really wasn't all that different from that process, but it's just that like, instead of like restraining ourselves to just the five instruments that we play or like these really specific ideas, like just to push past it a little bit and see if we could, you know, sort of add to the overall concept in that way.
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. And I think The Silent Life, which is the first track we're going to play from you guys here, I think it does a good example of kind of showing the elements you're wishing to add, but also showing those elements that people have come to expect from you guys. What can you tell us about this track?
That track, I think that track is a good example. It was initially written like it was just had that real basic riff, and like I remember Brody sending it to me and just being like, is this usable? And I just kind of thought about it, and I was like, yeah, this is absolutely usable. Like I could hear a vocal pattern over it right away. Eventually, when we finished the demo for it, the song was like 9-ish minutes long, and we had to pare it down a little bit, I think.
Sure.
But then it was also the first one that our friend Zach added saxophone to. We sent the demo to him, and he just kind of sent it back with a video of him playing over it, and we were all just floored.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. It actually, like, that surprised me. I remember when I first heard that song, I was like, "Ooh, this is nice."
Yeah, yeah.
I kind of just imagine a Ron Burgundy-esque looking guy. Does he have a thick mustache?
No, he's a pretty normal looking guy, you know, like a college student fella.
Mm-hmm. And how are you replicating that live? Is he with you guys?
No, he's not with us, unfortunately. Yeah, just we don't right now. We're only playing one song that features saxophone, so to, you know, bring an entire other body in the van, right, and stuff like that, wouldn't be terribly practical. We did have another guy in Chicago kind of come out. His name is Bruce Lamont. He's played with a band called Brain Tentacles. He's done work with Neurosis, a bunch of other bands. He came out and he sat in with us for that part. But other than that, it's been all backtracked so far.
Right. That makes sense. But I know he's featured in The Silent Life, but there is more saxophone on this album than just that song, which is very nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, with that, we're going to swing it over to the Silent Life. We'll be right back. So let's talk about before you guys were signed by Metal Blade. Now, were you always a bassist? Is that, have you ever played guitar? You know, the six string.
Yeah. I mean, I initially like bass is my first instrument. And you know, now it's like pretty much like gotten all of my attention as a musician, you know, outside of, you know, being a vocalist too.
Yeah.
But like, there was a time when I was younger where I was really focused on playing guitar. So I kind of got like a background in that, and it helped with me, you know, create like a better relationship between, you know, what I'm supposed to be doing as a bass player and what the guitars are doing. But yeah, bass has always been my instrument. And, I started playing six string bass when I was 17, 18.
Sure.
Because I was in I joined a band where the guys played, seven string guitars.
Yep.
Like back in like 05 ish, somewhere around there. And they, I saved up and like, was I going to get like a five string just to, you know, go along with them, or like, there's a six string. It's essentially the same thing, but there's an extra higher string.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured, hey, I might as well keep my options open. So I started playing six string bass.
And
then that's just sort of been my thing ever since.
Okay, so you still play the six string then?
Yeah.
And when you say kind of it helped you learn how to, you know, how that relationship between a six string, basically an electric guitar and a bass guitar should function, what's your approach to that when you come at these songs? Kind of what's the thought process about like, well, I should play like this right now, or I should play like more reserved, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it depends on the mood of the song, honestly. But, a lot of times, like my mentality is like my role is to bridge the, you know, the music that being made by the guitars with the rhythm of the drums. Like I'm like kind of a middleman, right?
Yeah.
So I'm playing to their music, but also to the rhythm of the drums, creating that, you know, the kind of hand-holding effect.
Mm-hmm.
That's always my primary goal when writing bass lines for the band, is to make everything cohesive. Any other stuff, you know, like, you know, extra lead lines or like maybe a solo or some slap bass parts or something like that. Like, it's just like icing on the top. The real meat is the bass line being played.
Right. And that makes sense. I think it's good to talk about, because you had mentioned how, a lot of the songwriting goes through, did you say it was Brody who does a lot of the,
yes,
the main, okay. So a lot of that goes through him, but I think to the layperson, they don't understand. They maybe think he's writing like the bass parts and all that too. Is that true? Or are you coming at that with your own bass stuff?
No, he'll write pretty much everything, like, but except for bass, you know, like he'll send me like, you know, he'll write a demo with like beautifully fleshed out guitar parts, like tons of rhythms and harmonies, and he'll have the solos planned way in advance, you know, also with really intricately programmed drumming, but that, which is also subject to change by, you know, Jared. But then there's never bass on it. And then it's up to me to learn the riffs and then take them to the place that I think they need to go.
Right. So it's kind of like a decision of, well, should I just echo these riffs, or am I going to do something different? Right.
Yeah. And it usually depends on the part, or, you know, if it's a really good riff and I think that needs to be the focus, then that's where I'll stay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's a big open part and needs a little more texture, it can do that too.
Yeah. I mean, so you're the glue, you're basically tying everything together.
That's what I try to do. You know, I try to keep it all together.
Yeah, exactly. It makes sense. And, you know, I know it's a tired question, but who were your inspirations? Why did you decide, hey, I want to play the bass?
I actually didn't decide that I wanted to play the bass.
Okay.
I actually wanted to play drums.
Sure.
But so I asked for a drum kit when I was 13, mm-hmm. and for Christmas, and then I got a bass instead.
Oh, okay.
I guess my parents figured that a bass is a little quieter and took up less space in the house.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are. You know, I just started doing it. I don't even really recall having that much like background as far as like what it was, that what the instrument even was before that time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right. Like I got a bass and I was like, oh, this is like a guitar, but it's a little different, right?
Right.
So it kind of was on me to like really seek out like through music that I liked and see and like find interesting bass players. Like I remember finding out about Korn and then like getting mm-hmm. really enthralled by like what Fieldy was doing.
Yep.
Mostly because he was just so out front, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of bass players out there that just kind of sank back at the time, but like guys like Fieldy from Korn and Ryan Martini from Mudvayne were really like kind of like early big influences on me. Like I could like people that I could look at and say like, oh, these guys are, you know, taking this instrument somewhere out front,
right?
You know, in a kind of music that I like.
And did you like, you know, were you already kind of versed in metal prior to getting that bass, or did that bass springboard you into getting into metal?
I mean, no, I think it was probably these times were close together, but I think I was into metal beforehand. But I remember like getting like the soundtrack for the original Matrix movie, and that had a bunch of like Rob Zombie, Marilyn Manson type stuff on there, and that really kind of sparked my interest in that. And then after that, I was like, oh, I kind of feel like I want to be a part of this in some way.
So then how old were you when you got this bass?
I was 13.
Okay, 13 or so. And then when did you form your first band?
Probably about a year later, a group of friends and I, you know, started doing cover songs.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like, and was this, is this the same
Nirvana
band?
And like Nirvana and... like the White Stripes and some really basic cover band stuff that you would expect.
Mm-hmm.
But then also like we branched out and did some Rage Against the Machine.
Yep.
And some heavier stuff here and there, some System of a Down.
Well, Rage Against the Machine has some lovely bass parts in there, so I'm sure that was
Oh yeah, for sure. It was that was a bit of a light bulb moment, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Bomb track comes to mind. So anyhow, was that the first, you know, that band you're talking about right now? I'm assuming that was a different one than the one you were in before Rivers of Nile. Did you then?
Yeah, that was way before. I was in like tons and tons of bands. I was playing, you know, shows pretty actively for, you know, 7-8 years before Rivers of Nile was even a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with various bands.
Now, you know, we've featured, you know, plenty of independent artists on our podcast, and I think they'd love to know, and we'd love to know too. I know there's no secret, but going from being an indie band to getting signed by Metal Blade, you know, what kind of advice would you give to those artists that are still out there grinding, trying to get signed?
Just don't sell yourself short, and like try and observe as much as you can. Like if you happen to get on a show with bands that are more established than you, don't make it all about you. Like try and like look at what all these other bands are doing and what the attitude of like maybe even touring bands are.
Mm-hmm.
and try and just like kind of put yourself in their shoes. Like it's a tough thing to do, but you can learn a lot that way. And I remember us, you know, Rivers of Nile doing that early on and really being like, okay, what's the attitude of success here?
Sure.
You know, and sort of adopting as many of those traits as we could.
So are you kind of saying like, kind of the adage of like, act like you've been there before, or, you know, like try to carry yourself?
Oh yeah, it's always fake it till you make it, really.
that's definitely accurate. I've definitely lived by that in my life.
Yeah.
So then what do you think it was, you know, how did you guys get that initial break? Let's talk through the initial signing of Metal Blade saying, hey, we have faith in you guys and we'd like to sign you. How'd that go down?
Yeah, it's still kind of a blur to me, honestly, but like, you know, we had been out there grinding as a band for 4-ish years, you know, and we'd played, you know, we'd done our own independent touring and had put out a couple of EPs and you know, I just like really done as much as we've done as much as you can do as an unsigned band, I think.
Sure.
You know, until like just something about, like, towards the end there, we made a couple of release quality demos of new songs that we had written, and then took it upon ourselves to make a music video too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what really caught, you know, Metal Blade's attention. We had actually fielded a couple offers.
We were here with Obituary.
From different labels.
Sure, absolutely. And then you just kind of felt like Metal Blade was the way to go.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's hard to see Metal Blade, you know, send a contract across, you know, when you've grown up listening to, like, Black Dahlia Murder and the Red Chord and, you know, tons of their bands, Cannibal Corpse, et cetera, and, like, really not take a hard look at that.
Yeah, right. It makes sense. And is that's something where, so have you met Brian Slagle?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Not a ton of times, you know, not too extensively, but we've crossed paths before.
Right. Okay.
And he's always been like very encouraging.
Yeah. And of course he's iconic. I mean, for, you know, the Slayer.
Certainly.
And even early talks with Metallica. I mean, that's pretty cool in itself.
Yeah.
All right. So I think we're going to get to the next track, which is A Home.
Okay.
Let's talk about A Home from your perspective. What's this song about?
Ooh, this song has some pretty heavily emotional stuff going on in it for me, especially. It's kind of actually lyrics are kind of about my dad.
Sure.
And his life, and just sort of me reflecting on the ways that he and I are similar and have, you know, made, you know, some of the same mistakes.
Right.
He's just never been a guy that's been too grounded in wherever he's at. And so, you know, you get lines like, you know, you can never call this home kind of stuff happening. I mean, I have a good relationship with him, you know.
Yeah,
it's not like
my next question,
like you might listen to the song and think like, man, like he's got some real baggage here. And like, you know, I think anybody does. Like, being, you know, having a relationship with a parent is a hard thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's just something about, you know, feeling locked into your own destiny and, like, having to circumvent that in a way that I think resonates, you know, with people, and definitely enough with me to write a song about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, of course, people can kind of take their own interpretations as well.
Absolutely.
But it seems like we've talked to obviously lyricists before, and it seems that some of them want to get into what their songs are about and why they wrote it, and then others are more like, oh no, I'm not going to tell you that, you just take it as you will. So where do you fall on that? I mean, you've kind of shown us already, but
I've definitely written songs of both varieties. There are songs I know, especially on our last record, that were very, like, there's just sort of this organic quality to it where, you know, just any kind of anything is happening in the lyrics. Just the words that came to me while I was writing it. But then there's also very specific themes and imagery being used for all sorts of things. If somebody is like is telling you that a very specific meaning for a song that they've written, and are very like hard line about that, like, I think that's important, but also like there's a chance if a person is saying that this is up to the listener. Like they might not have any idea what they're talking about.
True.
there's a chance.
Sense. Yeah. You know? It could be a way of scapegoating out of that one.
Yeah.
I actually remember I read some previous interview you did. I can't remember for who it was, but you had said that this album was more personal from a lyrical standpoint. Do you still stand by that?
Oh, absolutely. Like, it becomes more personal, you know, by the day, especially now that we're out here playing these songs for people in the audience. And I see people singing the lyrics back to me, et cetera. You know, I see people getting, you know, I feel the energy of a song like that, like A Home. In a room like that, and you know, it's when you release a song to a big audience like that, like it's less mine now. It's, you know, other people are assigning their meanings to it, and you know, letting it become a part of their story. So no matter how I feel about it, it's you know, kind of transcended that, right?
Absolutely. I think that's a good note to send it over to. So here's a home. Overall, how would you say the response has been to the new album? I know it's still pretty fresh.
Well, I mean, so far, you know, for the, it's been, you know, a way above and beyond anything I could have imagined. You know, just when we, before the album even came out, there was just a slew of reviews that were just like calling it a masterpiece and, you know, 10 out of 10 and all this, like saying it's a groundbreaking record. I mean, whether or not that's true, I mean, it's still like for something that we took such a big risk on, hear, you know, people really, really look at it that way is kind of surreal to me.
Oh, I'm sure. And yeah. Is this something we can expect from Rivers of Nile, that you guys are going to continue to kind of push the envelope, take chances, you know, that kind of thing?
I think we, you know, I should hope so. I mean, I hope that, you know, the things that we decide to do are perceived as interesting, but I can't really be the judge of that. I can only like really look at it from my own eyes and
right.
think, you know, what I think is worth putting out in the world.
What I'd like to say is like with this album, cause I was comparing this album to Monarchy, and it seems like a lot of the songs you have these moments of ambiance where you let the song just breathe. And then there's, you know, these different instrumentation that's coming in. Do you think some of that is here to stay? You know, is the saxophone now going to become like a staple in your sound, or is it maybe just something you've tried on this album?
Well, that's something we'll have to wait and see about. Yeah. You know, we haven't written a single note of a new record, so
yeah, I mean, know. I'm asking you loaded questions.
It could be, you know, it could have no traditional death metal instrumentation on the record for all I know.
Right.
But we'll have to wait and see. There, you know, is it going to have distorted electric guitar? Is it going to have an oboe on it? I don't know.
Yeah.
We gotta cross that bridge when we come to it.
Obviously you guys have deserved some time to enjoy this album and all that it represents.
Sure. Yeah. But it is something that you put your mind on pretty quickly after releasing a record.
Sure, and especially when it gets such a strong response, which I think it deserves. I've really enjoyed it, and I can tell you that...
Oh, thank you.
Tech death, if we want to call it that. If whatever you want to call it, whatever. It can get dull. It can get dull. And I think
this
is a breath of fresh air, and it's been a pleasure to listen to.
Oh, cool, man. I'm glad you like it.
Absolutely. So, with that being said... let's go through some plugs. Where can people find you? How much of that tour you got left? Anything you want to tell us?
We got about 2.5 weeks left on this amazing tour with Thyroid's Murder, Dying Fetus, and our friends in Enterprise Earth and Sanction.
Awesome.
And you can look all those dates up on our Facebook. It's just facebook.com/Rivers of Nile, obviously. I mean, all of that stuff is there. We have a pretty extensive library of, you know, video content to watch, too, on YouTube at this point. So if you're bored, that's a cool thing to check out, I guess.
Awesome. And we're gonna end this podcast with Where Owls Know My Name, which is the title track off the album. Briefly, what can you tell us about the title track?
It was one of the first demos that we had finished that really spoke to me and said like, yeah, this is something unique from what we did before. And, you know, that beginning vocal passage, where it's, Andy Thomas from Black Crown Initiate and myself singing together, that came to mind pretty quickly. But it still felt like, you know, something, you know, adventurous and almost dangerous in this sort of genre to toy with. You know, it was one of those things that I thought, you know, I love this. I love this with all my heart, but I can't place full faith in, you know, every death metal fan out there that they're going to feel the same way. But, you know, it was just so good that I couldn't, you know, we couldn't not put it out, you know?
And is that the reason, what was the reasoning for saying, hey, this is going to be our title track?
I mean, that was just, you know, that's always been a me thing. I heard it and I was like, this in a musical form expresses to me what I think this whole thing is about.
Absolutely.
So, so that, you know, it ended up being the title track, and then I sort of wrote the lyrics after that.
Absolutely. All right. Well, it's a great one to end on, I think. It's one of my favorites. Again, Adam, good luck on tour. We look forward to hearing more from you guys in the future, and hopefully you guys come around the Midwest, that North Dakota, Minnesota area, so we can catch you live.
Oh, yeah, of course.
All right, take care.
Take care. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so very much for listening. That was...
Adam Biggs.
Adam Biggs.
The big dog.
You think he gets that a lot?
I don't think so.
No, probably not. So with that, thank you again for listening. Remember to check us out on all the social medias, on iTunes and Stitcher. Give them rates and reviews.
Of the highest order.
Highest order. Only 5 stars, like we said in the intro. With that, we will play you out with the title track for Rivers of Nile's newest release, Where Owls Know My Name.
Horns high.